What if every child graduated from school knowing not only how to swim, but how to recognize danger, make good decisions around water, and come home safely? It's a simple idea, but one that has the potential to save thousands of lives. Around the world, countries are recognizing that drowning prevention begins long before an emergency. It begins with education. Today, we're joined by someone who has helped turn that idea into action. Sam Johnson is the Royal Navy National Lifeboat Institution's Water Safety Education Development Manager and has played a leading role in developing and implementing England's National Water Safety and Swimming Competency Framework and National Water Safety Education Pathway. His work brings together educators, researchers, schools, government agencies, and water safety organizations with one shared goal: to ensure every child has the knowledge, skills, and confidence to make safer decisions around water. Away from work, Sam lives in Brighton with his wife, Ellie, and his 3-year-old son, Leo. Like so many people working in drowning prevention, his commitment is both professional and deeply personal. For those of us in Hawaii, this conversation couldn't be more relevant. As we look at strengthening water safety education across our islands, England's experience offers practical lessons on how research becomes education, education becomes policy, and policy helps save lives. Sam, welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety. I thank you for doing this. We have a lot to get through. So, for our listeners, I want to say you're going to be talking about how this was developed, how you built this framework, and the education pathway, because there was a lot to bring together in that introduction, how you're going to measure success, and what lessons do you have for us in Hawaii? So let's just start. What
Right.
problem was England trying to solve when this work began? And what
Margaret, thanks for having us. The problem we were trying to solve is from recent research that we've just had published by the Royal Life Saving Society in the UK and the National Child Mortality Database just 2 weeks ago. And we know that in England alone, a classroom of children drown every single year. So what that means, and for context, this is around 33 children every year, and many of these deaths are entirely preventable. So in a nutshell, that's the problem that we're trying to solve. We want young people to reach adulthood, and we don't want these young people's lives to end early, and we don't want the impact and the trauma that then puts onto their families. And we already know as well that we have key times of year when this is a problem, when this happens. So drowning risk increases in the summer. It increases then as well as young people get older. So as they transition from primary education in England at the age of around 11 into secondary school, and they're perhaps l spending less time with their families and with their caregivers, spending more time with their friends and their peers, and like anyone around the world of that age, they're wanting to fit in. And with this, that risk increases. They're less likely to be supervised. They're perhaps more likely to take risks. And then with that, we know as well that drowning in England disproportionately affects males, to the tune of about 85% of those that drown are sadly male. So we already knew a lot about the problem that we're trying to solve, but back in 2018, when people started looking at this, we knew that mainly the consistency of message wasn't there. Different organizations, family members, campaigners were saying slightly different things to young people, which, as you know, if you're teaching someone maths or you're teaching someone to read, if you've got different people saying different things to you, it doesn't always all come together. So we set out on a piece of work to really drive for consistency of message to ultimately try and reduce the number of young people that are both getting into trouble, but then sadly also drowning as well.
Well, that's really interesting because I think consistent messaging is really the important piece to be successful. So, your background, which I didn't mention, you were an elementary education teacher, is that correct? Okay, so you bring that also to this. So, tell me how you developed this framework. How did you get people together to do this? And what exactly is this framework? It's sitting in front of me. It's well done. So.
Yeah, and I guess it is, of course, not only on me to take any credit for this. This was started before I had anything to do with it. And again, it's really standing on the shoulders of those that have done both research internationally, nationally before. But in effect, what happened was there was that recognition through a piece of research in 2017. In England, three organisations came together. So, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, who I work for, the Royal Life Saving Society in the UK, who train lifeguards and lifesavers all over the world, and then Swim England, which are the national governing body for swimming in the UK. So that's everything from getting us into the Olympics through to teaching children to swim. We came together and we looked at that message and we said, yeah, we're all saying slightly different things. So we need to go on a journey. We need to drive for consistency of message, not just from what a child's learning in the swimming pool, but also what they might be hearing from their teachers, from their parents, from campaigners, from even a fire officer when often they're sometimes the people that are also giving messages. So we started out on that journey to change that in effect. And the first part of this journey was to go, well, A, we need to work out what the message is going to be. So at the time, we had lots of messages that were perhaps framed around acronyms. So children were having to learn, maybe four, five, seven, nine letter long words, and then all of the meanings off of them. And we worked with a research agency we're still working with today called Sherbert on some research where we worked with teachers and young people. We did focus groups to understand actually what messages land well with young people, and we learn from that, and again, kind of bringing through some of my experience as a teacher, that these messages work well when they enable positive behaviors. So not necessarily focusing on what you shouldn't do, but actually what we want you to do to have fun ultimately. It also works when you empower children. So you're giving them knowledge that can help to ultimately keep them safe. So making those messages really relevant to them, age appropriate, action orientated. So again, like really clearly telling them what to do in a succinct way. So with that piece of work, we authored what's called the Water Safety Code. So there is a four-part message that we would want any young person to learn as they move their way through development. It focuses on hazard perception and risk management, but then also ultimately what to do in an emergency. And for those that are familiar with the drowning chain, it's really mapped across the drowning chain. So the message itself is stop and think, stay together. If you're in trouble in the water, float. And then if somebody else is in trouble, call 999 or 112. So
That's
that's your
great.
head, and that's our headline message. The framework then is everything that sits underneath that, so the expanded form of this message. And what's really important here is what we wanted to do was develop something that a swimming teacher could use in a pool and bring to life in a pool, but then also your classroom teacher who, maybe they're never going to step foot in a swimming pool, could bring to life through storytelling or discussion. So we needed to create something that gave the bare bones of what we would want a young person to learn, to then allow those that were going to develop materials to build on that, and that's ultimately where we started back in 2021, 2022.
You've accomplished a lot since 2022, I'd say. And in this document, you talk about a framework makes direct link between cognitive competencies and physical competencies. Can you tell me a little bit more? Because you've just kind of expressed that.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about here links back to a piece of research that I know people credit all over the world. So this was a piece that was published in 2017. So this is by Rob Storman, Kevin Moran, Linda Kwan, and Stephen Langendorfer. So this
Right.
was the piece of research from swimming skill to water competency towards a more inclusive drowning future, drowning prevention future. And ultimately, what this started to do was to map different competencies that someone can learn to give them the full protection, I guess is the right way. So when we're talking about cognitive competencies and perhaps aquatic or physical competencies, typically in the most simplistic sense, we learn a lot of physical competencies through standard swimming. If you were just to rote teach swimming and not really talk to the child about why that might be an important skill to learn. And then in a classroom, you might cover off some of the cognitive abilities. And that's just two locations. Now, of course, any child that's growing up in the world is generally spending time outside with their families. And you will, as you develop, piece together these things from family members, from clubs that you join. So it is a very holistic look at water safety. But that piece of research really underpinned this piece of work because it allowed us to start to look at where those potential gaps were and where they needed plugging with things like classroom education. Because ultimately, sadly, or even let's say hypothetically, if you were to take a child and say, for some reason, this child can't learn to swim, we live on an island in the UK. Like, we're surrounded by water, whether it's the sea or inland water. Like, if that child can't learn to swim, what would we want them to know to keep themselves safe? And that's where we were coming at with this. But yeah, that was really our basis.
Yes. And then the other piece was, I think, that made a difference. And it's from Mike Tipton. And it's quoted here. It's widely recognized that water competence is the key factor in an individual's safety and enjoyment around water. There is a growing body of evidence, both nationally and internationally, that classroom-based water safety lessons improve the knowledge, understanding, and confidence of children in respect to water-based risks. That piece of research that he did, where he looked at kids in a school, asked them what they knew, did their 20-minute lesson, then reviewed it 3 months later, to me is important for everybody to understand. Because when you have measurable evidence-based research, like you're talking about that 2017, but now we're taking it. It actually can understand what makes sense in a classroom. So, could you explain a little bit about that? Because I feel that was really the tipping point here. But.
Yes, so this was published in 2022. The piece of research itself took place all across Hampshire and is and around a city called Portsmouth, which is where Mike's a professor at. It worked with a number of different agencies, but it was delivered in part by RNLI volunteers working in schools with 14-year-olds, and they covered key risks. So they talked about things like rip currents and just some of the basics around rip currents. They talked about float to live as a key concept of what to do if you're in trouble in the water. And they made it really short and simple to just test that concept of are these messages landing well with this age group in a really basic short session? And then, as you said, are they retained over time? And it proved that it worked. And I think we knew that it would work, but it hadn't been tested, in the UK before to that level. We know we need to do more of this. So right now, the RNLI have commissioned an agency, and we're working with them to look at the delivery of the water safety codes by lifeguards across the country. So each year, our lifeguards, before they go and work on beaches, will go and work in approximately 1,000 schools across the UK. And again, we want to understand how those messages are landing. What's the impact of a lifeguard who can talk about their experience of being on the beach yesterday, and perhaps even being involved with, say, an incident or a near miss? Like, what does that real life experience of being a lifeguard being brought into the classroom have on both the young people, teachers, and then their parents as well? So this piece of research we're doing is really comprehensive, and we'll just further build on that good work that Mike and the team did back in 2022. But that was really a for us to be able to take that piece of research that the team out at Portsmouth did to policymakers just helped really underpin that argument that this can be added to a curriculum. This can be taught in schools. It doesn't just have to be taught in a swimming pool, for example.
Well, that's a really good message for us here. I think people understand that, but it's getting it into the schools. So I'm hoping when I present this next Thursday evening, that'll give George Santeo some resources to look at. And I will definitely use you as a resource for him to talk to if that's agreeable to you, because I
Of
think it's
course.
okay. So we've got this framework. Tell me now what I thought. This is great. You have a framework. But on top of that, you did an education pathway, which is amazing. You gave examples of what they should be learning in each grade at each developmental level. I was blown away. So why don't you tell us what you did with that?
So yeah, the framework kind of maps out what we want a young person to know, broken down by key stages. And we work through from when a child's kind of entering formal education to exiting it. So we work from around 3 to 18. Fortunately, we weren't starting from scratch here. And I think that's a really good learning is there are loads of fantastic organizations, charities, in some cases, government initiatives, families that are campaigning. So what we didn't want to do in England necessarily was start from scratch and go, right, let's write one lesson for each age group, because there's been millions of pounds and years of investment in this. But what we wanted to do is work with those organizations to ensure that what they were delivering, that consistent message, so helping them evolve their own programs and then signpost to those programs through this document. Again, we built on some great work in Scotland. So Scotland developed what was called a progression pathway back in 2021, which again pointed to some really good pedagogical approaches, especially for in the classroom. And then Wales followed suit in 2024 and published some great both English language and Welsh language materials, so that materials could be delivered in schools in Wales, and that's really crucial in Wales, where things must be available bilingually. So that pathway ultimately was a signposting document with some good practice that we've gathered over the years, that for the most part is tested, evaluated, regularly used, to. Because we know that in England, teachers' time is non-existent. They need things quickly. So if you're, say, what's called a PSHE lead in England, so this is like personal, social, health, and economic education. If you look after that area of the curriculum, you might be planning for your whole school, and having a document like this when you land on water safety is one of those key things that you need to be planning in from next September. If you can have a document like this that can help you just leave some breadcrumbs as to where to go next, that was exactly what we wanted to achieve with this document. It's really just about efficiency more than anything, because that effort's already been put in by so many.
Well, I was impressed that for each age level, you had specific examples. Could you give us an example for our listeners of grade level or anything that you,
What have we got at? We've got some really nice resources for the 3 to 7 year olds. So we developed some we developed some video materials for children back in several years ago now, where we in effect worked with a film crew who had a camera like kind of stuck on their head. We were trying to make point of view videos to help with this whole decision making, and to help a child, let's say they're in London, they don't have access to the beach every week of the year. We wanted to kind of bring them to that location and give them that immersive experience without having to leave the classroom. So we developed some materials for 3 to 7 year olds that we're trying to reinforce the importance of adult supervision and holding, as simple as holding hands when you're walking along, say, a riverside, or heading out for a walk on the beach with your family, which is just such a normal part of life. But reinforcing these messages and making them something that is just part of a child's education is really important at that age. Then as a child develops through and moves into, say, like the upper primary age group, we start to introduce more like scenario-based learning. So we've got materials that we signpost to there that give children an imagined scenario, provided with like images. In some cases, we might have like a short paragraph that they can read or be read out to, so that it's as accessible as possible. But starting to give them an idea of like, should you call 999 in this situation or should you not? So less completely black and white, but starting to introduce like, what else could you do? And starting to introduce a discussion around water safety, because we know with children as they transition through primary school, that discussion, that child voice, giving them some say in their own safety is really valued by them. And then as you move through the pathway, again, we then shift towards that kind of, as I've mentioned before, the movement away from adult supervision to more of like, you now are more responsible for your own safety, but perhaps also then of others that may be slightly younger than you, but also maybe your peers. So we start to introduce things like we may just have discussions around, there are some workshops that just look at discussions around risk. So they don't necessarily specifically talk about water safety, but they just bring in that idea of like, is risk taking a good thing or a bad thing? Or is it neither good nor bad? And actually it's just part of being a human. So we trying to develop broad conversations around these, and then you can a good teacher will be able to weave in water safety into those conversations. And then the pathway, as you move right through into that upper secondary age group, we start to give young adults, if you will, in effect less directive messaging. So we've got one where we in effect ask them to be investigators, a bit like Sherlock Holmes. We give them loads of information. So we might give them some pictures as a statement from like a police report, and then a transcript from a 999 or a 911 emergency call. And they then have to work backwards and piece together what happened in an emergency situation. And again, this you can structure that and ask them key questions to help kind of bring out some of the learning, but you're not stood at the front of the classroom just saying, do this, don't do that. What you're doing is giving them a scenario that can feel real to them, and that they can discuss, what could have been done differently to avert this, and what key message out of the four key messages were really important to be understood in this scenario. So just talking through some of those there, we're trying to develop resources and materials that are, as we touched on, that are age appropriate and help scaffold learning.
Right, that's what comes through in this document really clearly. So, are you going to continue? Is this what you're saying? Research on this as you continue to develop more and more? That this is kind of an evolving process, I take it, this framework and educational pathway.
100%. So, I can't take much credit at all for any of the aquatic swimming space. That's very much set by a number of swimming organisations. I've mentioned Swim England as a national governing body for swimming, but they may well review their learn to swim framework in future and adapt elements of that. And we'll need to then look at, well, what are they learning about at this stage, and does that still align? We'll then continue to work. So, one of our partners at the Canal and River Trust who look after a lot of the inland waterways around the UK, have done some fantastic research with a behavioural change organisation to develop like co-developed materials with young people. So, trying again to reframe and get into the psyche of young people and go, well, what's important to you at 15 when you're walking home along a canal in central Liverpool, for example? What are the types of conversations that we need to help you to have, rather than just telling them loads of safety information? So there's some fantastic ongoing research that organizations are doing that we can continue to learn from. And I mean, my intention with this document is it's reviewed every couple of years, and it's digital, so we can do that really easily.
Right. Well, this is a very good example of collaboration and what you've been involved in. And I think you're right. People have done great work and they're all doing different messaging, but we need one clear message that goes out about things. People here will say, well, we need to have a different message for this target group. Yes, maybe, depending on the age group and how you communicate it. But what you're talking about, your water safety code, is that what it's called? That's excellent. And that makes a lot of sense to have that as a broad framework to then develop the whole framework from and the educational pathway that you've discussed here. So, my question is, how did you do this? How did you get all these people? How were you involved with getting everybody to go, yes, we want to work together? Because we haven't talked about why you're even on the show. Adrian Mayhew, Mike Tipton, Dr. Morgan, when they were on my show, were very excited to say, guess what we're doing? In the fall of 2026, we're going to have water safety education in the schools. And that's how you're here. So, how did this happen? Because we need to learn from this, because this is really great.
Well, I've talked a bit about the organizations coming together, almost 10 years ago now, and I think the bit I haven't talked about alongside this was, sadly, families are affected across the world on a daily basis by drowning, and in the UK, we've had dozens of families over the last 10 years who've shown the courage to step up, engage with government, with journalists, with our sector, to share their lived experiences of loss, in an effort to turn the memory of losing a child, losing a partner, losing a friend, into something that can promote change. And I think key to this piece of work, and key to the ongoing collaboration between organizations, has been working with some of those families. So there's a few I'll mention. So Rebecca Ramsey, Becky Ramsey, had been running a campaign for her son Dylan. And throughout the period that we'd been collaborating as a sector on this, her work had led to petitions. So she petitioned the government and had over 100,000 signatures across the UK. That led to debates in Parliament. It led to then further engagement and briefings of ministers. And then other family members as well campaign. And more recently, we've been working with a mother called Vanessa Abess, who lost her son Joe in 2023. She has again been campaigning, working with her local MP, working with organizations to in effect advocate for change. And more recently, so we it may have crossed the world, so to speak, that we had a really, really difficult May half term here, so that's when schools break during the summer term here. So children have a week off, and in that week, the water temperatures are still really low here, so they're often below about 15 degrees Celsius. So the risk of cold water shock. So those people that have listened to Mike Tipton's show will know about this, but yeah, the risk of cold water shock is really high. So when we then get a heat wave in the UK, which is anything above about 25 degrees, people naturally want to cool off. And if people aren't aware and understand the risk associated with that exposure to risk massively increases. So during that May half term, we had at least 17 people drown in the UK, which is much higher than in a normal week. And 13 of those were children. And I mentioned earlier that generally in a year, we might lose 33 children. And so it was a lot for 1 week. And off the back of that week, Simon Haycock, who lost his son Sam, and has done some fantastic has been an ongoing advocate, but he engaged with the Mirror, which is a newspaper here in the UK, and they've actually been doing a print run campaign, which is not something you see as much these days. A lot of things are done online, but they've been doing a print run campaign, which is you can go and pick up a paper and read about it, but it's also there online as well. And again, that's really continued that pressure, because we have got water safety onto the curriculum now. It has been because of collaboration between the sector, between families, and then researchers. But what we now need to do is ensure that it's delivered consistently, that it's reported on. We need to make sure that swimming attainment rates go up and are held. And then ultimately, in England, and as the WHO guidance calls for, is we need better government coordination in the UK around this. It's lacking at the moment. We don't have a minister for that has water safety as their responsibility in England. We do in Scotland, we do in the Republic of Ireland, we do in Wales, but we don't currently in England. So all of this work does wrap into this somewhat, and education is a key part of reducing drowning risk. And I think in some ways this piece of work is just the start, but it's an important start, and it builds on 20 years of having state-funded swimming education. It builds on a good groundwork because we know that's not universally there across even the developed world.
Right.
So yeah, that's how we got there. It took a lot of Zoom calls, a lot of spreadsheets, a lot of back and forth between different organizations. Very few arguments, though, in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, we did come to a good level of consensus, and then some great support from the designers and the people that pulled all of it together towards the end there to make it into a readable document that wasn't just however many pages,
Right.
60 or
It's a
so.
great model for us to look at here in Hawaii. And you've said some things that are very parallel to us about having somebody in government who's head of water safety. And it's interesting you say that because I just wrote to the governor saying, we have a wonderful water safety task group. We have people doing great work, but we need leadership and accountability from the top. We need a water safety executive who actually can in your office says this is a public health issue and it gets state priority because we can all be working at this level, but it'll push things faster, it'll get more credibility and more support, I believe. So that's interesting you say the same thing. I hope that becomes something for you in Britain, so that just like Scotland and Wales, that you have that.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to that, and I haven't mentioned it much, but we've been working to a plan in the UK for the last 10 years through the National Water Safety Forum. So that brings together all of the UK nations, and we're about to launch England's first water safety strategy. So similar to you have a Hawaii plan that you kindly sent over, we're
Yes.
next month launching our England strategy, which again, like what we've been talking about today, will form part of that. But it's timely, and as I've mentioned, there's still lots of work to do, but the working through that forum or that connectivity of organizations has been really, really important. Not to necessarily remove brands and things like that, but actually just to have a collective voice, because if you're a policymaker, you need to be, where possible, just speaking to kind of one person, even if one person perhaps that's representing the whole, because again, they don't have time to speak to 17 different organizations all saying slightly different things. So yeah, that's something else. It's not my area of expertise quite as much, but it's something that I'm observing as we continue our work.
Okay, so let's get back to this framework. So, what I heard was you're starting a pilot. Is there a pilot right now that's going on? And then you're going to start in the fall? Or tell me what's going on.
So we launched it in Parliament, in next to right next to Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament on two, what day is it today? 2 weeks ago today, which was cool.
Congratulations.
We had 15 minutes to talk about it, and it went on record. And in effect, that's us then publishing it onto a website. We put out a press release around that as well. Got support from the Minister for School Standards in the UK, who's been really supportive of this piece of work. So that's foundational, isn't it? That's going, like, we've launched this now. The next step is to get it in the hands of teachers. So a couple of things that have happened just in the last 2 weeks. We had this fantastic, I mentioned the heat wave back in May. We had a there's an organization called Votes for School in the UK, which run like weekly surveys with children, and it's all around like debating and on hot topics. So they ran one proactively on water safety and had 40,000 children from primary age through to kind of college age pupils engage with this, and they did a huge amount of research with this for free, sent it over to us last week. But off the back of that, we've just sent the framework out to all of the schools, so probably several hundred, if not several thousand schools who've engaged with that, and again, it's just starting to get word out that this is something that's available to support practitioners. We also are running CPD, so a professional development for teachers. So there's different organizations, are engaging with primary school teachers, secondary school teachers, and signposting to this as part of that CPD. And this is in effect what we're trying to do at the moment is where water, like that classroom-based, cognitive-based water safety is now on the national curriculum. We've got to transition quite a lot of knowledge from what is the third sector, the charity sector, the life-saving world, to teachers over the next 10, 15 years, and there's a lot of existing teachers we need to reach with this, but then there are also people who are going to be learning to teach as well. So we're starting to explore how to engage, and we've a few really warm contacts with universities, with colleges, where we can work with trainee teachers so that this becomes part of just what you learn when you're a teacher. And then other ways that we're disseminating,
That's a very good point. Yes.
And from a long-term point of view, that's, we could need to get it in some textbook, if textbooks are still a thing. That's what we need to get in there, especially for those that are, working in the classroom day to day. There's something else I was going to mention that's.
I took your train of thought. I mean, we're surrounded by water also. It seems to me that every child should have the right to be safe around water. Just, and it makes total sense. And the educational system is the system that really provides that ability for every child, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we teach children here to ride a bike just before they start secondary school. Like we teach them to get themselves around, and it's a as you say, it's I grew up about 2 miles from the coast of England, and as I got older, learned to enjoy the sea, the ocean in more and more of a way as I, learned to surf when I was like 18 and got really involved with that. And it's not just about keeping them away from risk, but it's about enabling them. Swimming is such a gateway to enjoying so many different activities as a young person and as an adult. I think this is what this is about, is what you don't want are people, who are scared of enjoying the water, whether that's playing football next to the sea and just hanging out with their friends and are worried perhaps because of the risk. We want people to understand and be able to make good choices so that they can enjoy being by the water, because let's face it, like people do, like people, you just need to look around the coast. Like that's where people like to build their houses. People are drawn to it, and this is ultimately what it's about.
Right. And to us here in Hawaii, it's really kind of part of the culture of Hawaiians. So, what would you say? Because you've seen that water safety plan I sent you or whatever. What lessons does Hawaii take from what you've done, do you think? Should we develop? I mean, we're trying to do this, we're trying to get water safety into the schools.
Yeah, I think I mean we've talked about some of it already around that. I mean we're doing it today, like engaging with practitioners and researchers to build that ex th on that existing knowledge base. Because there will be some things that within the framework that we have in England that are translatable to that Hawaiian context, but there'll also then be other island nations or perhaps, other contexts that are also similar, and I guess it's about building that understanding of what's right for the Hawaiian culture as a whole, and that's obviously something that I can't necessarily speak to, but I think
Your first part of the water safety code, stop and think, is
is quite
really,
universal.
yes.
So at like a younger age group, we talk about like spotting dangers. As we get into an older age group, it's about knowing dangers. And I was just actually in what's called an alternative provision today for children with special educational needs and disabilities. I dropped in to see a practitioner there who'd been working with children with autism, and I didn't just want to go in and give them a talk because I didn't understand that context. But just through a short conversation with her, we talked about the water safety code. She was like, "Oh yeah, just leave me. We've got these things called spot the danger posters, which are just really simple illustrated posters with a setting. So you can imagine like a Hawaiian beach with people doing different things. Some people are in danger, some people are not. They've got flags, they've got lifeguards, all this sort of thing. She was like, just leave one of those up on my wall. And she's like, we won't speak to the children about it, but over a month-long period, she's like, children will come and speak to me about it. And I think what I reflected on from that conversation is that children, all children just learn in different ways. Some will be really focused on the thing the minute it's pinned up on the wall. Some will observe it subconsciously and then want to talk to an adult about it. But just again, going back to that kind of hazard perception thing, just starting to drip feed that into young people's awareness as early as you can, and starting to talk about that with them is really important. And again, I think for one thing we've learned in England as well is, especially younger children might not necessarily be moving around very much. They might not be going to the beach every weekend. They might be staying in the town that they live in. So it's about giving them imagery and talking about those places really local to a young person, and I'm talking about within maybe a mile of their home, so that it really makes it real and allows young people to kind of contextualize that learning. So there are definitely some things that could be taken across, but within that pathway especially, there'll be some pedagogical practices, some things around like vocabulary, how we use key questioning to drive discussion, which I know that teachers in Hawaii will resonate with. There'll be slight differences between how we do things, but I mean the fact it's both, it's written in English is always helpful, isn't it? Because
Yeah.
I
Well, I think the idea that you're continuing research to understand how you're developing this framework and its pathway to its continued success, I think is an important piece that you can't just start something and not continue to evaluate it.
There is an area I'm really interested in. I think reading through your plan, I picked up on is we've done some research into. We have a program here called Swim Safe, where we take children who can already swim and have a good level of competence around the ages of 7 to 14. We take them and we put them in open water. That sounded a bit brash. We take them and we give them a learning experience in open water, be that like a lake or the sea. So in a really kind of safe, supervised way, we give them what for some of those children is their first experience of open water, and it's open and cold water. Now we've done research to show that knowledge is retained through these sessions, which is great. But I'm really interested to see if there are learnings around the world of where learning isn't just retained over time, but children also have really meaningful experiences that affect them, emotionally, kind of at their core. And I'm thinking of those children that, if that is the first time you give them an experience of being in the sea, what was that like for them? Not just like, did they remember the thing afterwards, but like, was that life-changing for them? Because it is different going into the water and feeling weightless. Like, for some people, it's not a very nice experience. And I think that's an area I'd really like to understand more of, is that are these meaningful experiences for people? And should we be, and this is where I think in England we should head, is these are things that we would want every child to have an experience of. Being an island nation, being surrounded by water, I think it's really important that we kind of head in that direction.
Experiential learning, right? I think that's a really good piece. We had Bruce Hopkins come out here from Bondi and he did a rip current clinic and he took people in a rip current and told them how, that you're not going to swim, you're just going to go with the flow, float. And he explained before he did it. It was a terrible day, Sam. It was probably the worst. The middle of the week is the worst weather. The rain was going horizontal. And he thought none of the people that showed up were going to get in the ocean because it was cold for our standard. We got 30 people in the ocean in two separate groups. And people came out high-fiving because, as you're saying, a lot of people had bad experiences or fear. It's a rip current. This is dangerous. I could die. It's going to take me out to sea. But they learned about it and got in it. With somebody who's been trying to do this around the world right now. And it was a really good experience, but we can't just do it once. It has to be a continual process, right? And that's what he was trying to say to us. I just can't come once and help train you. It has to be an ongoing thing. So, experiential learning, yes, I agree with you. Absolutely. So, what are you planning to do in that regard? Are you going to do more research or are you planning some kind of educational piece or?
I'd really like us to do more research as a nation into that, and especially that experience of cold and moving water. It doesn't necessarily need to be, a rip current on a beach in Cornwall with like double overhead waves or anything like that. But that experience of cold and moving water, I think, is really important here. There's also some really great work by an organization called the Surf Life Saving UK. So they're an organization that run that kind of competitive. They're the grassroots organization for beach lifesavers in the UK, and they've got a program that gives children in water experience, but also like on the beach experience. I think some of that's really interesting as well. So that outdoor learning, and that side of things. So we'll be doing. I'd like us to do some more research in that space and just learn from those programs, and especially learn from those that are working. Those that are working to be truly inclusive. So perhaps working in a one-to-one setting with a young person or any person, to really understand them and what are the barriers to them experiencing water. Because I think that's where we can learn the most. And then we can help extrapolate some of that learning for the masses, if you will. Because my work for the last almost decade now is focused on system, population level. But I think it's really important that we do keep going back to those individuals, like I experienced today going and chatting about. I think there were 15 children in this alternative provision unit. Is trying to understand like what are the barriers for these young people and what the best opportunities for them to learn as well.
Yes, that's a really key area, the area of disabilities, learning disabilities, and autism. I think David Samuel's program, Sandhoppers, which is
Yes.
in Brighton, is a I thought was a brilliant program because a lot of people send their kids to swimming lessons or know something, but they may not know how to swim themselves and they kind of stay away from it. And so I think it's great that the parent is involved in the water with their child at a young age. I think that just bridges that whole support system for staying safe.
Yeah, 100%. And like I myself plan to go to that at some point with my little one who's 3.5. Like, I'd really love to do that with him. And I think it will be good to structure that around an actual program because I think it's a really difficult line to tread, especially with a preschool age child. I was just in, we were in the sea during the heat wave last week. And the temperature of the water still here is quite cold. We weren't experiencing cold water shock, but my son isn't used to going into 16 or 17 degree water. So it's bridging that gap of like I want him to feel confident and competent, even with say like a flotation aid on or even being held by me to enjoy that experience. So I think a program like Sandhoppers is really good because it provides that framework and that support from somebody who perhaps isn't in the family, and I think that can be really beneficial. For young people as they're kind of transitioning from preschool into like school age, like that can be really, really impactful.
Well, that should be good. We have through this conversation talked about weather. So I know that Europe is experiencing a heat wave and temperatures almost went to 100 degrees. Is that correct? 36.4 degrees Celsius, higher
Yeah.
than that. So 98, 99 degrees Fahrenheit. And you're going to experience another heat wave again in July. And you said at the beginning of this, people start jumping in the water. They're hot, and you've had a lot more drownings. So, what can you say about climate change? I know that Mike Tipton has been responsible for a conference called Climate Change and Health. And should this be part of your framework, climate change resilience, and how we teach adaptability for floods? Because we've had that here. We've had fires, floods, all kinds of situations.
I think that is a fantastic idea about that future iteration. And I think to date, the framework's been quite purist in a sense. It's really focused in on, in the broadest sense, water safety. But when you broaden it out to all of drowning prevention and that broader look, I 100% agree that climate change piece is really important. And if, as is the case in Europe, we're going to see more frequent extreme weather events. So whether that's, in the UK, that might be storms through the winter. It could be flooding in the autumn, and it could be heat waves in the summer. We need to prepare our population for just that. So yes, in effect, at the moment, we as a sector are still really adapting to how our responses during those, like the heat wave of just last week. So we actually downed tools last Monday. What was that on? About 7 or 8 days ago, and we said, look, we need to write to every school in the country because it's about to reach a temperature it's never reached before. Schools are going to potentially close right in the middle of this heat wave, and we're going to be letting children of all ages out, potentially not to be supervised by their parents. So we took the decision last week that we were going to try and re remove as much red tape to email all the schools in the country, and we're working with a trusted partner. The RNLI emailed 98% of the schools last week with some key messaging, again connected back to Mike Tipton's work around cold water shock, the water safety code, and then some key things that a teacher can do ahead of the end of term. So yes, this is something that's going to definitely get worse in Europe, but I think one thing to reflect on is this is already been something that some countries have been experiencing for decades, and you only need to look at certain island nations. Places in less developing countries are disproportionately being affected by this. So we have an international team at the RNLI who are looking at just this and looking at how we can better engage with governments around the world to raise the awareness that climate change is impacting and leading to increased risk to drowning. To exactly what you were saying. So I think this is something we need to raise the awareness of in that intergovernmental space, but then we also need to look at how we then educate the population as well to keep them safe, amongst various other things, whether that's looking at how we plan for the future and how we flood defenses and all that side of things as well.
If you were to leave a message to children about what they should be, what lifelong water safety lessons should they leave school with, what do you think it should be?
I think from so we've had now for adults in the UK, we run a campaign called Float to Live, which some people listening may have heard of. We've now had over 50 people proactively write into our organisation to say that that message nudged them when they were in trouble in the water, and that was whether they're in the sea, in a lake, in a river. And what's interesting is it wasn't just our target audience that were playing that back to us. We had children from like 10-year-old children who heard that and floated in the sea for 40 minutes because they'd seen it on an advert of a TV program that they were watching with their parents. So I would say to children, like, float to live, learn to float, find your float, because that's a really key skill that can help you. Whether you just need several seconds to get your bearings when you've been thrown off your surfboard in the surf, or whether you've fallen into cold water and you need to regain control of your breathing, like that skill of being able to find your float, remain calm, and then orientate yourself does save lives. So yeah, that would be my one piece, and it's part of the water safety code, which is good.
That's wonderful because July 25th is World Drowning Prevention Day. So, well said. And last year we did participate in Kauai with Mike Tipton with Find Your Float, and we got junior lifeguard program and people in the outrigger place to float. So, we're going to do that again because I was talking to Georgina. I'm sure you
Very
know who
cool.
she is, who works with Mike Tipton.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I was just messaging her today. Oh, very cool. I think we'll be doing some things in I think we're doing some things in London this year, which will look cool against skyscrapers, and that's a different slightly different view, but yeah,
Well,
it's great.
you've left with a really great message, Sam. I really appreciate you coming on. I think one message that stands out from this conversation that drowning prevention doesn't start with a rescue, which we see all the time. It starts with education. And England's framework reminds us that becoming water competent is about much more than learning to swim. It's about understanding hazards, recognizing changing conditions, assessing risks, making good decisions, and knowing when it's safer to stay out of the water. Those are life skills that can protect children and eventually their own families for generations. Here in Hawaii, surrounded by water, like they are in the UK, and welcoming millions of visitors every year, that's a powerful lesson. We already know many of the solutions. The challenge is making sure every child has the opportunity to learn them. So thank you for your leadership, Sam, and for sharing England's experience. And I plan to do that next week.